to Bedlam in Boston Garden. Standing ovation as the Celtics are about to be introduced.
Now, wait a minute. I'm about to be introduced. Where's my standing ovation?
Yay! It's Radio Boston's Chris Sitterick, so I'm guessing we all know what we're going to talk about.
Tiziana, I don't know about you. We are in week three here of No Live Sports, and it is driving me crazy. There's nothing to watch to kind of get away and unplug a little bit from all of the hard, heavy news we've been dealing with during the week. And I'm sure you're feeling that too.
Well, yeah, and we have a particular heartbreak in our family this week because my daughter, who's a senior in high school, she and my husband have a tradition of going to opening day together. She'll be off at college next year and probably not able to do that. Red Sox opening day, opener.
Yeah, right.
They were supposed to go yesterday. And of course, it didn't happen.
Right, right. So with that in mind, I was thinking it would be a lot of fun to kind of revisit some of the greatest moments in sports history. There's been this kind of resurgence. I say sports history. I mean Boston sports history. What else is there?
Because is there any other sports history?
No, there's been this interesting...
Wait. Somewhere out there is a Yankees fan right now
screaming
at their
radio. It's fantastic.
Radio.
I love the back and forth. So there's been this surge of interest in kind of rewatching old games. And I thought kind of in that vein, let's look back at some of the greatest moments in Boston sports and figure out what should folks who are really itching to watch some ball, what should they look for?
That's right. So pen and pencil out, take notes, because these are all things you can go find somewhere.
That's right. These exist mostly on YouTube. I wanted to start, as you said, yesterday would have been Fenway's opener. So yeah. I wanted to start with the Red Sox. And this is maybe a little bit cheesy to start with 04. But in terms of sports moments, it just doesn't get any better. So I know you hate this as a host. I have to set the stage a little
bit. Set the stage.
2003, the Red Sox get defeated on a game-winning home run by Aaron Boone. It was as close as they had been to the World Series in my lifetime, basically.
Because this was pre-breaking the curse. For people on our and our listenership who maybe are not huge baseball fans,
yeah.
We had not won the World Series since the teens.
Right, exactly. You're looking at 86 years here, coming off a brutal loss the year before. 2004, they are down 3-0 against the Yankees, and it just felt like, great, here we go again. They're down 4-3 in the bottom of the ninth in game four, and you just felt like, here we go again. Let's listen to Joe Buck describe it.
Just turned midnight here at Fenway Park. 12 hours ago, JB was welcoming an NFL television audience out at Foxborough. 12 hours later, the Red Sox are 3 outs away from being swept.
First of all, there's nothing worse than being swept out of the playoffs because it's like you didn't even show
it's like
up.
You didn't belong.
But to really kind of understand what they were up against, not only were they down 3-0 in the series here, they would have had to win 4 games in a row to
and
beat
what
the
team?
Yankees.
The Yankees.
The Yankees, right, exactly. This is when this rivalry was huge. You had Mariano Rivera on the mound for the 8th and 9th innings. He's the best closer ever. If you had to pick one guy throughout the history of baseball to shut down a lineup for 1 or 2 innings, it was Mariano Rivera. The guy was invincible. So, as I said, Sox are down 4-3, 3-0 in the series. There are 3 outs left. All of a sudden, Kevin Millar, in 5 pitches, 4 of them are balls, and he walks to first. And you kind of think, okay, Mariano Rivera doesn't walk guys much, especially on 5 pitches. It's crazy. He usually goes right at them because his stuff is so nasty. So all of a sudden, Dave Roberts checks in as a pinch runner on first base. Mariano Rivera looks a little nervous. He checks the runner 2 or 3 times, throws over to first base. Everyone in the stadium knew Dave Roberts is going to try to steal second. This is it. Dave Roberts is going to try to steal second. Even Tim McGarver and Joe Buck knew that that's what was going to happen.
That was close.
He's gone.
You certainly got a lead big enough to go.
And sure enough, with Bill Miller at the plate.
Miller still waiting for his first pitch. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
Goosebumps just hearing it. So it's kind of ridiculous that that moment, even in real time, had an electricity to it because... Great, you stole second base. That's the tying run, not the winning run. The tying run, and you're still down 3-0 in the
series.
3 games,
right. Can you just, you're not coming back.
It just feels like, how could they possibly surround it? But there was something in the air.
There was.
And all they had to do was get Dave Roberts home, tie it up, send it in extras, right?
This season hanging on a bunt here.
Up the middle. Roberts will come to the plate. The throw by Williams. Bill Miller has tied it.
So that's the bottom of the ninth. You're already talking about past midnight now. Let's fast forward to the 12th inning now. You're well past 1 a.m., the 12th inning. Manny Ramirez steps up, singles, gets on base. Who but Big Poppy steps up?
Poppy!
Ortiz into deep right field. Back is Sheffield. We'll see you later tonight.
I love that. See you later tonight. It's 1:30 in the morning. I mean, nobody left the park. There was just something electric in the air. It felt special. I've watched a lot of sports in my life. In the moment, hindsight, obviously, everybody knows it was special. But in the moment, everybody watching this game knew something was happening here. They turn around later that night, game five, 14 innings they pull off a win against the Yankees. And all of a sudden, it starts to feel like, wait a minute. And sure enough, they win two more, beat the Yankees, go on, break the curse. 86 years later, they sweep the World Series. One of the greatest moments of my life as a sports fan.
So there is so much joy to this, right? And this is why we relive those things. Well, it turns out the WBUR had somebody in the building for that. He was our guest already on the show today, Anthony Brooks. Are you there, Anthony?
Hey, yeah, Tatiana, I was there. I love the way Chris set up this, this
it's
moment.
It's fun, right?
Yeah. So, Joe Buck couldn't hold a candle to you, Chris.
Well, that's a compliment. That is one for the ages. All right, so the funny thing is you're a bit of a Sox fan and you were attempting to report on the game, Anthony, but what actually happened?
Okay, so, yeah, this is. I mean, it was a great opportunity. It was a great game. So I was there for NPR and WBUR. But here's the thing. As you said, I am a Sox fan, and I was doing my best to kind of display a kind of professional detachment like a professional journalist is supposed to do. It was also getting late. It was also getting cold. I also had sort of given up on the idea that the Red Sox had a chance to win this game. But there they were, tied in the bottom of the 12th inning. So every time a Red Sox hitter would come up to the plate, I'd walk out right along the box, the grandstand area, along the third base line, and turn on my tape recorder just in case something amazing happened. I would get the sound of Fenway Park erupting. So there, on the bottom of the 12th, they're tied up. Ortiz is up at the plate, and sure enough, he swings hard and sends the ball right into, I think it was the visitor's bullpen. Fenway erupts, pandemonium, huge cheers. I'm recording the whole thing, and this is fantastic news. So then I get back to the studio to record my piece and put it together for NPR, and I think we have a clip to play from that moment.
Yes, let's do it right here.
Okay.
Bases loaded.
Ortiz blasted Quantrill's pitch into the Yankee bullpen, circled the bases, and jumped into the arms of his ecstatic teammates at home plate.
What was the screaming, Anthony?
So that very front of scenes, you know, that was me. That was me.
The consummate
professional. Attachment gone. And I had a long moment listening to the tape thinking, oh, my God, I can't use this because I'm screaming all over my tape. Like an idiotic Red Sox fan, but I decided that it was drowned out enough by 37,000 other people. But once you know that story and listen to that tape, it's pretty clearly me screaming all over that
tape. I mean, Anthony, back me up here. Something about that game is because the Red Sox had every reason to mail it in, basically, to just say, it's not our year, not going to happen, everything's against us, we'll try again next year. And it was the fact that they kept playing, they were scrappy, they just kept fighting when they had every excuse to give it up. I think that's what gave it the weight that moment really had. What do you think?
It's true. And I honestly, this sounds cliche, but there were a lot of people. I mean, there were 37,000 people there that evening, and a lot of them hadn't given up. Because I remember interviewing some fans when they were at the beginning of the game. And I talked to these guys, I forget where they're from, but the Boston area, and one of them said, we got nothing to worry about. We're going to win tonight. We're going to win three more. We're going to go down to New York and beat them there. And, you know, we've got this under control. And I sort of took the tape away and thought, yeah, right.
This is before Boston was title town. Like,
this is at the beginning. You've had your moment. I've got one I want to put in here, too. Right. Anthony Brooks, thanks so much for joining us for that.
You're
that
welcome.
Was a riot. Okay, so I've got one for you. We're going to fast forward to 2013 now, okay? Because this is a special memory in our family. It's the 2013 ALCS, the American American League Championship Series. Yes, I know what that stands for. Thank you very much. Sox are
when
playing.
When you're in the World Series.
That's right. Sox are playing the Tigers, which you also have to understand. My husband and I were both born and raised in Michigan. So there's
a special connection here.
There's
okay.
a special tension to playing the Tigers. It's game two. Now, this was the year that the Tigers had pitching that should have just shut down all of
baseball.
Absolute
nasty rotation.
Yeah. So the Sox had been one hit by Anibal Sanchez in game one. And Justin Verlander was waiting to what one would assume is destroy.
Cy Young candidate Justin Verlander, yeah.
So in game three. So we're in game two. And Max Scherzer, who has been great, is pitching. The Sox are down 5-1. We're in the eighth inning, but suddenly we start getting runners on bases. Will Mitterbrooks, Dustin Pedroia. My husband and my daughter, Stephen Simone, the ones who couldn't go yesterday, are watching and they tell this story. They're sitting there waiting to see what happens. And all of a sudden, Big Papi comes to the plate to hit against the closer for Detroit, who they bring in to shut him down.
Bases loaded. Two out. Hard hit into right. Back at the wall. Tie game!
Wait for it.
The grand slam.
There it is. Grand slam.
Mr. Clutch.
Right, grand slam. So now we're tied. We go into the ninth inning, and just to put the cherry on it, at some point Simone had stood on one foot. She was 11 at the time. So the two of them decided that you must, right? This is baseball.
Yeah.
So they watch the ninth inning standing on one foot.
They would be bad fans if
That's
they did
right.
not.
And the Sox come back and win it. And as you well know, what happened at the end of 2013?
World Series.
That's right.
Absolutely. And I want to point out that game you're talking about, that home run. That is the cop moment with
That's
the cop
right.
holding his hands up in the bullpen, who has now become a Boston celebrity.
That's right. If you don't know what Chris is talking about, you use your memory. You've seen somewhere a picture with two legs in the
That's
air
right.
because
Torrey Hunter,
the outfielder from the Tigers goes over the wall and his legs are up in the air next to the arms of the bullpen police officer who is cheering the grand slam.
Another consummate professional.
There you go. All right, Chris.
All right, so I do
want another sport.
I do want to highlight some other sports here. And for me, basketball is the first love of mine. And growing up a Celtics fan at the time I did was a little rough. I had kind of just missed Larry Bird. I was a young child for the end of his career. But for most of the 90s and the early 2000s, the Celtics were not good. They had made one deep playoff run. And then all of a sudden in 2007, 2008, everything changed. The Celtics pulled off trade for KG, Kevin Garnett, and Ray Allen, and they created basically the first super team. All of a sudden, they were title contenders, and then they get to the finals, and they're playing the Lakers. Celtics, Lakers,
dun, dun, dun.
One of the greatest rivalries in sports. Game one, so, and I should point out, KG coming to Boston changed who Paul Pierce was as a player. He used to be kind of this selfish superstar just getting his points. KG shows up. They have this team defense mentality, becomes tough. He's a real leader of the team here. And so in the third quarter of game one of the NBA Finals, it looked like the Celtics could be in real trouble.
Certainly not the sight the Celtics and their fans want to see. Paul Pierce in a lot of pain, had to be carried off. Then they put him in the wheelchair as he's going back to the locker room. Obviously in a lot of pain, can't walk off on his own power. It appears to be the right leg.
Now, there's some interesting, somewhat gross stories about some of the things that happened while he's in that wheelchair. You can Google that on your own time. But about 5 or 10 minutes later, he comes back out of the tunnel.
Way.
The place erupts. And just listen to this sequence.
And now this huge ovation as their captain and leading scorer returns. Rondo to Pierce. Pierce for three. Bang! Celtics back up by one. Rondo back to Pierce. Another three. Puts it in. Back-to-back three-pointers for Paul Pierce.
So I got to say, I was working an event on Causeway Street outside the Garden. You could hear fans on the street. That building was rocking. I recommend rewatching anything from that 2008 finals. It was a great series.
All right, we've got about 30 seconds left, although we could do this all day.
You know I could.
I know. So without getting any more great sound, can you name a couple others that you recommend listeners go find?
I mean, if you want to go football, obviously everybody jumps to Super Bowl 51, where the 28-3 comeback led by Brady and the Patriots pull off the win. My favorite, though, is actually Super Bowl 49 a couple of years earlier, 2015. The Seahawks basically get the ball on the goal line. They have it on the 1 yard line. Malcolm Butler comes up with the timeliest interception of all time, seals the game. Pats win the Super Bowl.
So go find them. And listen, tweet us at Radio Boston. I think we'd get a kick out of hearing what your favorite New England sports moments are to relive. Chris Siderick, thanks for joining us.
Thanks
today.
For having me. Didn't include any Bruins. Too painful still. I'm sorry.
Yeah. All right. And that is our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. We sure enjoyed having you as listeners this week. Join us again next Monday for more Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Dearing, and we'll talk to you again soon.